Hi, everybody, and welcome back to yet another cracking edition of the Matt Brown Show. This is the Secrets of Fail series, where we're talking to innovators, entrepreneurs, and CEOs all about, you know, the things that didn't work out so well for them and their epic business blunders. And with us in the hot seat today is the CEO of Icon. It's icon4x4.com. And his name is none other than Jonathan Ward. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Cheers. Thank you, Matt. Happy to be here, sir.
Yeah, man. It's great to have you here, brother. So you're doing some cool stuff in the automotive industry, but I don't want to take your thunder away from you. What are you up to over there?
The shortest elevator pitch is that we are focused on revisiting transportation history in a modern context. So if we were only going to the second floor, I'd stop right there. If we're going to the penthouse, I'd say, I love traditional automotive design. The continuity and the vision and the language is so consistent, and it's so sorely missing from modern focus group, Wall Street priority, volume-driven, disposable transportation. But I found that I lacked the patience for what we could call the martyrdom of vintage. So three speeds, drum brakes, carburetors, the hell with all of that. So we really work to be loyal to the original design and utility principles of a particular vehicle, but then really evolve the engineering to really transcend it into something that's viable in the modern world.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying you guys have been around for 9 years. How have you guys, have you been growing consistently over the 9 years? Where are you guys at?
Yeah, we've been growing pretty much two digits nonstop annually. You know, COVID threw us for a loop in that while we, oddly enough, considering we make nothing nobody needs, we're considered essential workers, we did stay operational the whole time. But as you've heard from many other founders, you know, there was so much drama, be it with family issues or health or people questioning their career path and lifestyle or where they live and why they do what they do, that we lost a lot of key people. So That's probably our biggest challenge is struggling to keep the staff, especially when the skill sets demanded by what we do go against modern trends.
Mm. I love the Icon range. It's ridiculous. It's so sweet.
From the mind of a singular lunatic, for better or worse.
Fuck. What engine is in that, the Icon range?
The which one?
The Icon.
Well, we've got three production models, one based on the first gen Broncos, then four body styles based on the first generation Toyota Land Cruiser FJ40, and then the 47 to 53 Chevy pickups.
I'm seriously, seriously in market for this. This is awesome. This is awesome. But we don't have time for me. We have time for the Secrets of Fail series. So Jonathan, what is your story of fail for our audience around the world today?
I came up with a vehicle design about 4 years into the brand's growth, where I personally was concerned how brutally expensive our products were. And I said, well, I'm going to come out with something that's simpler, less complicated, kind of like the automotive equivalent of a good pair of flip-flops. And I'm going to not piss off as many people because of the pricing, and I'll meet all sorts of new customers. It was called the CJ3B, and I lost my ass on every single one.
Oh my gosh. Well, firstly, why did that happen? And I'm curious to know what did that whole experience teach you?
You know, I think it happened specifically because it was a very small footprint of a vehicle, and I failed to anticipate how that would compound the re-engineering and the evolving of the chassis and mechanical systems, just because it is so much more difficult to cram it into that smaller platform. I was merely focused on the simplicity of that platform, reducing the parts content and cost, but I was wrong. And then the lesson learned was just own it. Like, know who you are. Like, I hear you speak of, you don't really want to be managing thousands of people and scaling something to the moon. And it took trying that, succeeding in that, failing in that, whatever, to go, wait a minute, where is my happy space? So for me, for many years with our first brand, TLC, and with Icon, me and my wife run it together. And it was just run, 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 put out the fires, keep everyone happy, tell the story, keep it growing, keep it rolling. But where do I want to be? And I realized, you know what? The price is what the price is. And it's not because I'm greedy or because I hired some focus group to tell me the most amount of money I could squeeze out of people. It's standard, viable, 30-point spread business. And at the end of the day, we're not that scalable. And I'm cool with that. You know, I think we could be 3x, 4x what we are. But beyond that, I'd have to just blow up some core tenements. And, you know, honestly, I'm super passionate about what I do, and that's why it works. And I've learned, like, I literally finally year, I wish I'd done this years prior, but I wrote a list to which basically it had to be fuck no or hell yes to determine the path of what we're going to do next or who we're going to work with or what should we spend our time and attention on developing. And I think for a while I was just reacting. I needed sales. So sure, bring it on. I'll take it. Fine. Let's go. And then now, Mickey Drexler, a wonderfully intelligent businessman and a dear friend, has always been sort of my one man board and confidant. And even when we developed the concept for Icon, I went to Mickey and said, all right, here's what I want to do. But holy crap, I just built the first prototype on my own dime, and I don't know what to do. It's really costly, and I don't know, should I cut this corner? Should I simplify that? Should I go down the path that's already paved, you know, with the vendor already makes a part that I felt was subpar, not the experience I wanted to create? And Mickey just said, look, if you build it, they will come. Don't compromise, keep your passion intact. And then long term, that's, I think, the only way a founder can really stay engaged no matter what scale of one's business. So I think that was the critical lesson learned there. Like, okay, that could work, but it's the labor cost more than the content that creates the reality of the pricing. So I'm never going to come out with something that's more mass marketable. Mm. Unless I do it through a collab or a license, but then that gets super dangerous, I think, especially in automotive, because very quickly it cuts your brand's legs off.
Well, you mean Bugatti don't cut corners either, you know, and they sell out every time. And I think there's a lot of, it's almost like an oxymoron. You think you need to scale to that level of, you know, mass production, if you like Tesla or whatever, in order to, because you can, and maybe, you know, maybe your ambition or you're hungry for that kind of suffering. But in reality, like, Bugatti don't do that. Like, there's like only 100 of these cars will ever be made, you know, and that's what makes it valuable. And for me,
but they're cheating. They're cheating. Are they cheating? They lose their ass on every single car, and they write it off over the parent group and call it marketing. And God bless them. But I'm jealous. I have to make this shit viable on every unit I deliver.
But that's Bugatti, right? Let it be a sunk cost for you. Like, you don't need to have that whole story. I think there's some principles there that you can borrow, and it sounds to me like, you know, you're doing it. And for, I don't know, when I first saw you, I was before this interview, I was checking out your YouTube channel, and everyone go have a look at the YouTube channel for Icon and that. And I was like, fuck, this is just such a cool business. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I could redo my life and I was engineering minded, which I'm not, then, you know, that's the kind of business, like, it's car, it's tangible, it's a passion point. You connect with people, and you're different, and you can just do it and always be fulfilled in what you do. And I think that's like a huge thing to be proud of, you know?
Yeah. And it's something I often say when speaking at schools and stuff, respect your perspective. Mm-hmm. So if you have a vision, if you've got a concept, whatever your business might be to the listeners in your community, like, you know, you, for example, design schools, you get these creative types, they're into it, it's their passion to go to design school. Suddenly the premise of the school is to cram them into silos of convention. So they're all using the same software. They're all using the same perspective. They are to fit in a cog of a bigger machine. But at the end of the day, what made them unique and how they got into that school was their own unique way of seeing the world. For me, this was a hobby. This was something I wanted to see done because it's what I wanted to drive. And at that point in automotive cultures, you know, you had hot rods, street rods, pro touring, concourse stock, but no one was doing this sort of blend that's now, you know, in essence, become its own category of new and old mashed together. And I talked my wife into quitting her job. I quit my job, and winging a prayer, we opened the brand and went for it.
Preach, brother. So, Jonathan, if you could get into the Matt Brown Show time machine and do things differently, what would you do differently, if anything?
I would have built what I will steal from Napoleon Hill, love him or hate him. He's great, I think, great, interesting business writer from the 1930s. And his story is fascinating. But basically, establish your core beliefs and build a master alliance. For way too many years, my wife and I ran ourselves to the bone, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, 6-7 days a week, trying to do everything because we were bootstrapping. We've never taken in any outside money. In retrospect, I should have bit the bullet, doubled down, got a second mortgage on my house, whatever I needed to do to stop, breathe, and go, okay, we're wearing 50 business hats a day. Which of those hats actually fit well and do we think we look remotely cool in? And then build out the team, bring in other people with other expertises to make us more powerful as a collective versus trying to do it all, especially in creative, because I'm having to turn on the left brain, fire it down, hit the generator, go to the right brain. And that's very exhausting. And I think past a point, you end up not doing either very well until you build a business environment where you're really allowed to focus on where your passions lie and where you really shine. Mm-hmm. And I did do that, but I think it would have benefited me to have done that literally a decade earlier. So, I mean, like we have an MBA PhD car guy, which is a rare combination of words, as our COO. And this, you know, he brings the spreadsheets and the metrics and shit that I just suck at. I'm the creative goober. Yeah. And it's made such an impact in the structure and the process of, and the repeatability of what we do and the culture amongst the team. I really wish I'd had that thought earlier in my career. I recommend that to everyone. Mm-hmm. Even if you have to give up equity or pay it, not know how the hell you're going to meet the payroll, do it. Meet the right person, the right people. You're so much more powerful with those different perspectives all in alliance.
Mm. Awesome. Jonathan, what's your advice to other entrepreneurs or CEOs out there, you know, watching us, listening to us right now, about the importance of failure in business success?
Well, it's too easy to think you're learning something when you get good press and awards and patted on the back for your successes. But I think oftentimes the true lessons are found in really studying what did not work and really making sure you digest that and embrace that and reference that in your next widget or gidget or midget or whatever it is you're going to do and put out there. I also think respecting the passion behind the core idea a founder has in business and protecting that at all costs is critical. Because if you start to listen to others because you need their money or because you hired that marketing firm and they said, well, no, you really should redirect into this or into that, the further you get away from what you really gave a shit about going in, the less likely you're going to be a good leader and engaged long-term.
Mm, awesome. Jonathan, what about books? You mentioned Napoleon Hill, which I also agree with. Great writer. But books, tools, or resources you recommend to other entrepreneurs out there?
I love the design book, Cradle to Cradle. And I think that had a significant impact on how I design after conceptualizing. That's a wonderful read. And he's changed entire industries with that approach, with that mentality. And he's had a significant impact on many, many designers that that I respect. I mean, that's a really big one. And then, although he was quite an arrogant prick, I'm a huge fan of Raymond Loewy. And his autobiography that he wrote during the height of his career is an exceptionally good read, not just with interesting insights to that time and the really the focus on design really was the guiding light to brands versus, unfortunately, I think often it's become marketing veneer, but it's really far from the highest level priority. I learned a lot from that. And then I'm a big autobiography versus I don't like fiction because life's too short. So I really like to learn from experiences of people, and it doesn't matter what it was they did. It could be military, it could be general historians. But I think really diving in and understanding what people have learned, and again, stop, breathe, digest, personalize it and apply it. One more, I loved Sapiens. That book has stuck with me, and I've probably recommended it to more friends than any other book. In business, has it taught me anything? Absolutely not, I can think of, but we just talk about a damn fine book.
Well, Jonathan, love what you're doing. I definitely need to come out to California and spend some time with you. But unfortunately, that does conclude your time in the hot seat. Appreciate you for coming onto the show and lending your perspective. Great conversation. Stick around at the end here, but thanks for being on the show.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, man.
Cheers, everyone.